Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 16th of February. This hour of the program, the continuing demonstrations in Madison, the legislature's budget committee is to be voting on a bill perhaps this afternoon that would strip public workers of most of their union rights. The public hearing, as you know, there were many, many people in Wisconsin's capital city, Madison, yesterday, and they continued the hearings until about 3:30 in the morning, it's my understanding. We'll get more information from our first guest. And Democrats continued the hearings after 3:30 in the morning unofficially, and there are more people who are heading to Madison today. The head of the, or the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee said lawmakers would gather this morning to begin discussing possible amendments to the governor's budget repair bill before the committee meets around noon today to begin voting on that legislation. 17 hours of testimony yesterday, and we're going to have several guests with us to talk about the people who gathered, why they gathered, and if it will be meaningful. We have three guests with us this hour. Sean Johnson joining us to give us all the latest news. He's been one busy guy the last few days. Not that he's always busy, but exceptionally busy. State government reporter for the Wisconsin Public Radio, which is what we work for. Mary Bell is in a meeting this morning, but the director of communications for the Wisconsin Education Association Council will also be joining us. And Rick Badger will join us later this hour, executive director of AsME Councils 40. They represent tens of thousands of public employees all over the state of Wisconsin. Our phone lines the last few days as we have been on this story have been jammed. I'll give you the number early on so you can join us, your comments appropriate all hour. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. And we start our conversation with Sean Johnson. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Kathleen.
Any sleep last night?
Not too much, no.
Not too much. Not too much today as well. You know, the people were commenting on the sizes of the demonstrations yesterday. They were huge. I haven't seen anything like that in Madison in my 38 years in this state.
No, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I'm pretty green to the Capitol building. But I talked to somebody who has been here for 40 years, seen a lot of demonstrations, and he said he'd never seen anything like it here. Either. I mean, it was just, it was sort of a surreal scene yesterday. You had so many people show up, not only for these rallies, but to testify at the meeting of the legislature's budget committee, that they set up big screen TVs in the state capitol rotunda and used that as a waiting room, basically. And all the while, you had rallies going on within the rotunda, people beating on drums, chanting, against union busting, chanting to kill the bill. I just haven't seen anything like this for one bill, in a long time.
And the hearings went until, the official hearings went until 3:30 in the morning?
I think it was about 3 in the morning when they cut off the official hearing. And, you know, I think even Democrats would say privately that the hearing actually was handled pretty well, probably. It's maybe a stretch to say you're giving people 2 minutes to testify, really no chance to ask questions or get much involved testimony with the guests. But it was fairly cordial. The people testifying were friendly. The people listening to the testimony were friendly. But there was just they were just overwhelmed by the number of people who came to testify in it. And it was sort of coming in waves. You had sort of reinforcements of not only union members, but students who were just showing up throughout the day, coming to add their names to the list.
If there are that many people who want to testify about this bill, why not let the process go a little bit longer so everybody who made the trip there can say what they want to say?
I think the feeling was that if they let it go on longer, that the unions would be organized enough that they would probably be able to keep that testimony going on perhaps throughout the day Wednesday, who knows how long, if they're able to just keep it going, and that would slow down this legislation as well as, you know, just be sort of a PR nightmare for Republicans.
Right. Is it a PR nightmare for Republicans, or do you also sense that there is quite a bit of support among people who live in the state for this bill.
Well, it all depends on how you frame the issue. I mean, if you talk about it strictly in terms of bringing benefits, public employee benefits, in line with the private sector, which is what the governor campaigned on. He obviously feels very comfortable in that ground and feels like the public is with him on it, at a time when the economy is down and so many private sector employees or non-union employees have seen their pay and their benefits cut. If you frame it in terms of Wisconsin taking away collective bargaining rights, you know, taking away worker rights in a state with very deep union roots.
Mm-hmm.
With one of the first collective bargaining laws, which is credited as a state that's being credited as the birthplace of Ask Me, it's like a whole different story at that point, and that's what's really getting unions, both public and private, riled up, is the taking away the collective bargaining rights.
I have a piece here that was on WizPolitics.com this morning, and I'm wondering what the background is, that the Joint Finance Committee co-chair said lawmakers will gather this morning. They will be discussing possible amendments to the governor's budget repair bill before the committee meets around noon to vote on the legislation. Have you heard any talk about what the possible amendments might be?
No, not out of that committee. I think the more interesting forum to watch will be the state Senate. And what will likely happen there is you'll get, I think you probably get basically most of the bill intact passing the Joint Finance Committee, where Republicans hold a 12-4 majority. You've got a few votes in there that they could potentially lose in that committee, but they certainly have the votes to pass it. In the Senate, Republicans can lose only a couple members and still pass this thing. They have a 19-14 seat majority. If they lose a couple, they can pass this thing with 17 votes. If they lose three, the bill's dead. And you have members in there, just sort of by the nature of the way Senate districts are drawn, you take in more territory. You have members in there that have both prisons in their districts, universities. They represent a lot of people that are covered by this. Also, just more swing districts in the way that the Senate's drawn, and you have a lot of, you got to remember, teacher unions are affected by this collective bargaining stuff too, and of course everybody has public schools in their district.
Right.
So that'll be the forum to watch, and probably the best thing unions could hope for at this point is that the collective bargaining language is pulled out. But I don't know if that's I don't know if the Senate is going to go that route. The governor's been pretty firm on this.
Public schools are not operating in Madison today. Can you tell me who made that decision and why that decision was made?
I believe it was there were enough public school teachers who were going to call in sick that the district just decided it would be a safety concern and just a logistical concern when you've got when you've got half your teachers gone. It's maybe best to cut your losses and pull the plug on that day of school. So, how that plays out in sort of in the public relations battle over all this, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It looks as though, because the Republicans do have the votes here, Sean, that this will pass. When you think about, I know you're wrapped up in what's going on right now and it's big, but what recourse or what steps do public employees have? Does it just sort of go away and then maybe they look for other jobs, but you can't find another job? What's the future of all this?
Well, I mean, it's if you talk about union employees, government union employees, under the state's collective bargaining laws, I mean, striking is illegal. I think the question becomes if unions feel that those collective bargaining laws have been weakened to the point that, all deals are off and they feel disrespected, you could see some type of coordinated strikes throughout the state. Other than that, there are quite a number of non-represented employees, including at Wisconsin Public Radio, that will be affected by these changes regardless of what goes on with this collective bargaining stuff when it comes to pensions and health care.
Sean Johnson, state government reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, is our guest to fill us in on what's going on now in Madison. Joining us in just a little while, we'll speak with a communications coordinator for the Wisconsin Education Association Council and later the executive director of AFSCME. That union represents 33,000 city, county, school district, and caregiving employees in 71 of Wisconsin's 72 counties. Let's take a couple phone calls now for Sean, starting with Frank from Onalaska. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Hi. I'm not a teacher and I'm not a union member, although I used to work for the State Housing Authority, but no longer. I'm really, really furious at what the administration is doing here. You know, at the time when Wisconsin has got everything to feel good about, the Packers and the Badgers, they badmouth our business climate constantly and expect to attract businesses. My question is this: who is this group, the Club for Wisconsin Growth, that has advertised the budget repair bill that names three companies in particular that were known to threaten to move out of the state if they didn't get concessions from their workers, primarily union workers? Mercury Marine and Fond du Lac, Harley-Davidson and Sub-Zero. You know, this is just another big attempt for the business climate in Wisconsin to suppress wages. So I want to know who's behind that type
Club
of
for
advertising.
Growth. Thank you. And we invited them to be on, but we didn't get a response from the Wisconsin Club for Growth. It's a national organization, isn't it, Sean?
The short answer is because of the way they're structured under the tax code, you don't know exactly who funds them.
I see.
Which is the same way that, you know, campaign groups, what are ostensibly campaign groups for both Democrats and Republicans are operating more and more these days. And that's the case with the Club for Growth. One of the people, I'm not sure what position he holds with Club for Growth right now, but one of the people who helps run that organization was part of Governor Walker's campaign and certainly has close ties with Walker in that way. And so they're, you know, ideologically clearly on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Carl is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Carl.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And want to commend the reporter for giving what I thought was a very balanced summary of the debate. I've been a public school board member in another state. I have an advanced degree. I have a daughter-in-law who is a school teacher, so I'm not anti-teacher at all. But the comment I have is that this day has been coming for a long time. And many times in negotiations, we would discuss concerns about sustainability for the long haul. And the bargaining unit for the teachers, that was not an issue for them. And, you know, the problem is eventually you run out of other people's money. And so there have been warnings for years that these agreements were not sustainable and one day these kinds of things would have to come to pass.
Sean?
That's been the dig on the teachers' union in all this, is that they're now saying, look, we understand everybody needs to contribute to the state's budget issues and that we need to all pay our share. The Republican retort to that is, okay, why weren't you saying that a little while ago when at any point, basically? The teachers union has been a very powerful political entity for Democrats, and they've not gotten that way by bending on things in the minds of their critics. So, one thing to note, though, is just sheer numbers of people who are affected when it comes to, you know, picking off a fight with the teachers union. You're talking about 100,000 members' collective bargaining rights who are affected here, and they're all over the state. So this is something that's not just affecting people, you know, that government worker in Madison. This is something that's spread pretty far and wide in Wisconsin.
And will it spread beyond Wisconsin? We've made some national news, as you know, with some people saying that look for this to happen in Ohio, perhaps next week. In New Jersey, it's already been happening. Look for it to happen in other states that have a very strong Republican presence. Do you think that's true, Sean?
Well, it's a definite possibility. I mean, the very fact that, we could mention the name Chris Christie, and a lot of people would know that is the governor of New Jersey, You know that because he has gotten national acclaim for being tough with public employee unions. But the national labor expert that I talked to yesterday at a private New York university said what Governor Walker is doing is actually a step farther than what Governor Christie is doing, and that when Governor Christie in New Jersey has been tough with public employee unions or teachers unions, he has done it through the course of negotiations. That is, he's been a tough talking negotiator. And what Governor Walker is doing is just saying, look, these collective bargaining laws have not served us well. I'm not gonna bother with that. We need to wipe the slate clean. And so that's a very dramatic change. And yeah, if he's successful in sort of the heart of the industrial labor movement in wiping out collective bargaining laws for a very large public or a very large union, that is definitely going to get national attention, not only from other governors who are thinking, how do I deal with this, but, you know, just from people looking at this governor and Scott Walker, this governor in Wisconsin, to see what he's all about.
Right. What are you covering today? What's happening today in Madison?
I'm working on a story for NPR on this. And I'll tell you, in Madison today, it's going to be somewhat of a repeat of yesterday.
Is it?
You'll have waves of rallies, and then the legislature's budget committee is going to vote on this at some point today, likely, and then that sets the stage for probably a weird chain of events in the Senate and Assembly, and a lot of private meetings with lawmakers there to figure out what they're going to do with this bill.
Any inklings as to what the governor will say in his budget address next week?
I think he's going to say we're going to have some pretty deep cuts across the board, and that's why, you know, this proposal really does pair with that one, because he is giving local governments the power to cut back on labor costs, because local governments, both, you know, municipal governments, county governments, and school boards are going to see a lot less money from the state this year. It's going to be genuine cuts, potentially very deep cuts in those areas, and so that is his justification for putting this forward. He feels like he's doing local governments a favor by giving them these tools. And so, yeah, I think next Tuesday's budget numbers are going to be pretty dire.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Sean Johnson, state government reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Christina Bry is joining us momentarily, communications coordinator for the Wisconsin Education Association Council, and we'll take more phone calls on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We thought we would spend a good portion of today talking about the people who went to Madison yesterday, because it was a huge crowd, to find out why they were there, what they expect will happen with their jobs, their thoughts about their work, and coming just a couple days from now or next week, what will their thoughts be? What are their actions to be? Christina Bry is communications coordinator for the Wisconsin Education Association Council, and is joining us now. Christina, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about what's going on today in Madison. Do you still have a number of members who are protesting, who are planning rallies today?
Absolutely, and it's goes far beyond Madison. Across the state, we have members who, along with other employee unions, are gathering either before school, after school, into the evening, to raise their voices up against this damaging bill. They are, of course, taking buses to Madison. As we speak, there's people pouring into the Capitol, and we're planning another rally tonight after school at about 5:30, so educators who after school can get on their buses and get in their cars and come down to face their legislators and try to have their voices heard about why gutting Wisconsin's collective bargaining law will indeed hurt students and hurt Wisconsin as a whole.
And how will teachers be damaged by this?
Well, in Wisconsin, we have a really strong history of workers having a voice in the workplace. And when we talk about teachers and education support professionals, those are, you know, from custodians to paraprofessionals, aides in the classroom, secretaries, their workplace is a child's learning place. You can't separate the two. And when educators are allowed to have a voice in their schools, that makes Wisconsin schools better. Wisconsin's got tremendous results when it comes to public education, and so much of that comes from the hearts and souls of the people who actually work in the schools. When you tell them that they will have no voice in their schools other than bargaining a salary tied to the CPI, it really, it's like it just rips their heart out. It's saying, you've so little value my opinion that you're actually going to put into law that I don't have a right to speak up when it comes to my school and the things that are happening in it.
Last week, there was quite a bit of news. Things have changed since then when WEAC decided that they would embrace some measures that they had not been in favor of, teacher evaluations based on student test scores, performance pay, and a proposal to split up the Milwaukee public school system. I heard Mary say that that's off the table now. Is that off the table now?
At the heart of all of those proposals that President Bell brought forward last week was the idea that these are things that would be talked about between employer and employee at the local bargaining tables. Every school district in Wisconsin is different. They serve different groups of people. The students, the families, and the communities are different. And the best way to bring about any sorts of reform when it comes to school quality, educator effectiveness, and when it comes to how we pay educators for the things that matter most in teaching, we believe need to be bargained collectively. And if you're essentially taking collective bargaining off the table, I don't know how we move forward on issues that really matter to improving our schools.
Let's go to some phone calls. Our lines have been filled since we said we were going to talk about this topic. Chan is calling us. Is it Chan?
Chan.
Yes. Hi, Chan. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Chan Rickard. I live in Mauston, Wisconsin. My wife is a school teacher. In fact, she is there at the Capitol right now. She took a personal day yesterday after school as soon as she could. Her and some other teachers carpooled there. She was there for quite a while. And then when she got home, we've been listening to these two-minute testimonies. And it's not a lot of time, and a lot of them did go over a few seconds here and there. But they definitely made some profound statements. And one thing that you notice is there's no one in favor of this bill speaking to the committee. It's the collective bargaining that hurts the most.
Would you like to respond, Christina?
Absolutely. You know, last night at the Capitol, Leah Luke, she was the 2010 Wisconsin Teacher of the Year, and she's from Mauston. She came to talk to the thousands of educators who were gathered on the Capitol steps. And she talked about the students she served, and she talked about the things that matter to educators. And I think Chan is really, you know, right on, spot on. Educators, you know, they have been making concessions. They're paying more for health care. They're definitely seeing wages decrease, freeze in some areas of the state. However, the bigger picture here is the idea that you're telling a group of professionals that have selected to go into the teaching profession, again, that they just don't matter when it comes to any kind of discussions. And that's what's hurting educators like Leah and like Chan's wife the most. They're feeling very disrespected.
Here's an email from Dave in Westby, who is concerned about the University of Wisconsin having had a difficult time keeping the best professors or attracting the best professors to come to the university. He's a retired educator, and he says he would not recommend, as young college students, to go into teaching as a profession. I was proud to be a Wisconsinite, not anymore. Will it have an effect on the whole profession, do you think?
I really think so. I think you can't pretend that the younger educators or the people training to become educators don't see what's happening here, and they don't see this outright attack on public workers, including our school teachers. We're asking our teachers to do more and more. I heard you with your last guest talk about the looming budget that will be introduced next week. And the governor's made no... He's been very clear with us that deep, deep, deep cuts are coming on top of the cuts that have been coming to public education over the past decade plus. Also, you know, last night I had the chance to talk to the 2011 Teacher of the Year, Maureen Look, and she's from Waukesha, and she spends time in her role now as Teacher of the Year talking to new educators and people training to become teachers. And she told the crowd last night and told me personally that people are asking her questions. These young adults that are just on the verge of starting careers, wondering, is this the right thing for me? Is this all the work I'm putting into my education really going to be worth it in the end if people maybe don't really respect teachers the way that they used to? And obviously, from the governor's actions, it appears that our state leaders do not as well.
Christina, people had a pretty good idea in November of what this governor was going to do should he become elected. Do you think that public unions in this state fell short of trying to get a vote out?
You know, it's hard to say. It's hard to speculate. I think that the governor has made statements, and we knew he would definitely be looking at wages, benefits, all these things that we're willing to talk about at the table, and especially, you know, in our local communities, because we're taxpayers too. We live in local communities. I think nobody expected that he would go this far to say that 6 weeks into his term that he would strive to wipe out 60 years of Wisconsin collective bargaining history.
So you thought the table would still be there?
We desperately hoped that there would always be conversations available to happen between employers and employees, yes.
Jerry in Armstrong Creek, hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Jerry.
Well, I'm sure glad I got on because I don't hear anybody talking about the unintended consequences of what the governor's budget is going to do. I think you have to look at the history of collective bargaining rights. One of the things, I'm a former state representative, and my wife is a school teacher, but what's going to happen is a lot of the school boards up north, and I'm up in northern Wisconsin, and some of the poorer districts that have no resources, that have cut to the bone, schools are almost going bankrupt. Our school boards are going to have the power to not cut benefits by just a little bit. They're going to have the power to cut them by 50%, 75%. And they're not only going to have the power, the governor could actually force this on them, because people don't understand when he says he's going to cut shared revenue and he's going to cut school aids are not distributed equally across the state. Poor districts get more aid, richer districts get less aid. Mm-hmm. They will be affected less. So essentially, what the governor will do is tell these school boards, you're going to get a lot less aid. You can go to referendum to try to pass an increase to give teacher benefits, or you can just cut them. They're going to be actually forced into this. And legislators right now are voting on this change without knowing the consequences. That's why the governor put this in this bill instead of in his budget bill. In the budget bill, when he cuts school aids, legislators will be able to go to the fiscal bureau and say, how is this going to actually affect my district? That might affect their vote on how they vote for collective bargaining rights. Now, we can go back in time when the schools up north, and I'm not just talking about schools, I'm talking also about municipalities, they got paid a lot less. That's why there was so much labor unrest. Schools in the state will become unequal. Teachers will not want to come to the north where they won't have as much benefits than they do in the south. It'll create so much labor unrest. This is way bigger than what people are thinking about. When people keep talking about, well, it's only going to be a small cut, it's not going to be a small cut for our school boards have wanted this for years.
Christina.
Yes, Jerry's spot on. The idea that we're already dealing with a school funding system that everybody across the state knows is broken, that it treats different districts unfairly, unequally. So Wisconsin's not giving kids the same opportunity wherever they live in the state. It very much is dependent on property value. And in our Northwoods area of Wisconsin, they feel it already. To then, as under a budget guise, to enact this is really going to just have a chilling effect, because this locals are going to be forced, as Jerry said, either to go to taxpayers and be the bad guys, saying, okay, we need to pass something in order to increase your property taxes, or they're going to have to say, all right, teachers, all right, you education support staff who's only making, you know, maybe $10 to $14 an hour in the lunchroom working for, family-supporting benefits, they're going to be forced to say no more. And you're going to chase those highly qualified educators from those school districts, and they're going to go looking anywhere else. There was a report that just came out today about the rankings and estimates between all 50 states, and that shows that Wisconsin teachers are still slipping when it comes to average teacher pay. In Wisconsin, we're now, I believe, at 23rd in the nation when it comes to average teacher pay, and for our starting teachers, those who are just entering the profession, Wisconsin salaries are the lowest of all the states that touch us, all of our neighboring states. So the idea that we may lose some very, very good educators is not far-fetched.
Unless those hearings made a big difference, chances are that this bill is going to pass, and perhaps within a couple days. What are you going to do next week?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see. Definitely, we'll regroup. We'll talk to our members, the educators who have been just pouring into not only the state capitol, but into all their communities, trying to raise their voices to talk about all these unintended consequences from something like this. And we'll keep talking. We'll keep sharing our stories and figure out where we can go from here. We know we're going to be braced against whatever the budget may bring next week. We'll have to see where that goes. But, the educators and their belief that they ought to have a voice in the workplace, along with all other workers, you know, our firefighters, police, our university professors, all of these people deserve a say in their workplace. And so we'll continue to work in coalition, and we'll, continue to see where we can go.
Thank you very much, Christina, for being with us.
I sure appreciate your having me. Thank you.
Christina Bry, Communications Coordinator for the Wisconsin Education Association Council. Joining us momentarily, Rick Badger, who's the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 40. That represents more than 33,000 city, county, school district, and caregiving employees in 71 of Wisconsin's 72 counties. And, of course, we'll ask him. AFSCME has a very rich history here in the state of Wisconsin. We'll ask him about that and what their continuing plans are to protest the lack of collective bargaining proposed in the budget repair bill. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Here's our number. One line is open right now. Just keep the number in mind because we're getting flooded with calls. 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rick Badger joining us now. We'll be with phone calls for him momentarily. Hi, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
Tell me, Rick, about the breadth of your membership in the state of Wisconsin.
Pretty extensive. We represent primarily local government workers outside of Milwaukee County. Do have some private sector nursing home, hospital employees. We cover the full gamut. We have police officers. We have social workers, nursing aides, street workers, city hall clerks. It's extensive. If you think of things at local government level, pretty much other than firefighters, so we represent them.
And how many people did you turn out yesterday in Madison?
Our best estimate right now was somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000.
A lot of people.
Yes.
A lot of people. And tell me, we keep hearing about the history of AFSCME in the state of Wisconsin, how far it goes back and its impact on organizing in the country, actually.
Yeah. Well, AFSCME is actually about the only major union still standing that was founded in Wisconsin. It was founded in Madison in 1932. Really to take care of and eliminate the spoil system or patronage system where people would get public sector jobs because of who they knew and what politician. We pretty much take credit and proudly take credit for a lot of the things that have now become law for all employees. But we started out really just trying to make sure there wasn't corruption and that there really was a fair civil service system.
And all of your members, what are the consequences to them of no collective bargaining? How would it affect them day to day on the job, Rick?
It affects everything. And that's why you see such huge turnout, and not just from us, but from private sector employees who wouldn't be affected by this. When you think about what a union does and what it stands for in the workplace, you're talking about more than just, you know, I think as some folks have been putting out here, pension contributions or health insurance. I mean, you're really talking about issues of what is your schedule, what are your hours of work, promotions, evaluation, safety, grievance process, just cause, and quite frankly, just having that say in the workplace, which I think, you know, so many Americans find a value, whether they have a union or not.
The governor, as you are well aware, has said, we just can't do anything else. We have absolutely nothing to give. We don't have money. We have a huge deficit. So let me ask you, what's the answer to that?
I think the answer would start with, let's try sitting down. Again, I know the members who employ me and the feelings they have. And let's state the obvious. We're all taxpayers. We're all citizens. We know the situation. I guess I'd feel a lot differently if there had been some communication, some discussion, saying, hey, you know what, we need to make some changes. Will you help us? Because I think one thing that public sector unions do every day is find ways of serving the public efficiently. Our members get it. And this is not an issue about pension contributions or health insurance payments. This is really about having a say. And what's going on here right now is taking away the ability of any union, public sector union, to have that kind of discussion. I mean, let us be part of that solution. And by basically throwing us out of the conversation, I really find his claims disingenuous at best.
And why do you imagine, I know you're not on this side, but you've had a lot of conversations, why do you imagine that is the strategy? Why not have you at the table?
I really think there's a fundamental difference of opinion of the role of workers in the civil society. And you know, you look around the world and we watch the news, we see how excited we all get about folks in the Middle East standing up, many of them workers, many government employees, saying, you know, hey, we have rights, we have values. These are, you know, issues of civil liberties and democracy. And then to, you know, trample them down is incredible. And I really think there's a fundamental difference of the role of a worker in society. And certainly that's not how I was raised. That's not how I think most people in Wisconsin are raised. And I think that's why you see so much public support outside of the labor movement unit saying, wait, even people who think that public employees need to pay more, they say, wait, this is such an overreach. Why would folks want to do this when Wisconsin's had such a strong, solid history of labor peace and respect for workers in at work?
Penny in Sparta. Hi. Whoa, Penny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I was at the Capitol yesterday. I had taken some vacation time. I'm a social worker, and I work for a family care district. We're a public model, though, so I will also be affected by this, as I am a member of AFSCME. And it was honestly overwhelming yesterday to be there amongst everybody, and the energy there was incredible. And the fact that all of those people show up to the Capitol and say that this is not okay, and yet we're still thinking that this is going to pass is just obscene to me. I've been involved in bargaining before in my previous position with the county. And if anybody has ever been in bargaining, they realize that a lot of times wages are conceded upon for benefits or vice versa. So the benefit package that, you know, the unions receive is really part of our wage structure. And The other thing is, I don't understand where it ever became the mentality that if people have something and other people think that it's a good thing or that it's, you know, that everybody should have it, or why aren't we raising people up instead of bringing everybody else down? Mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
There is an element of that, isn't there, Rick?
No, absolutely. I mean, these are things that, you know, quite frankly, most of us in this country in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, a lot of workers, public and private, had. And I appreciate Penny's comments, and a lot of our members share those views. But I think the fundamental part, and I think what I hope the listeners appreciate, is the give or take at the bargaining table. There is a reality that you know, almost to a person, every member that I have talked to get that if there are sacrifices that need to be made, and let's say we have to, you know, find $100 million, let's do that together. That's the Wisconsin way. I mean, we don't when we look at the legislature, just say one group just can talk. We even when I was at the Joint Finance Committee meetings yesterday, you had Democrats and Republicans talking. Now, it wasn't always maybe as civil as some of us would have liked, but they were talking. In this environment, there's nobody talking. There's no two-way conversation. It's one way.
Thanks, Penny, for the call. Doug on the road. Hi.
Yeah, I'm in favor of Walker's plan only on account of I used to be a union member. I'm not anymore. I'm a semi-driver. My wife is a high school teacher up in northeast Wisconsin. I have a brother who's a firefighter in Waukesha. What a lot of these people are forgetting, and the way I live my life, I'm married, is the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And the people in the state of Wisconsin are hurting. Yeah, I would like to see Walker sit down with the teachers and, you know, the state work, but there's no time. $136 million deficit, there's no time. Because, look, when Walker asked before he took office for not to sign any contracts with the union, Madison didn't do that. This could have all been avoided. I'm in favor of what Walker's doing. There's got to be tough choices, but nobody wants to, you know, do it to everybody else. Don't touch me.
Rick.
No, I appreciate Doug's comments. I think that this is something where I think that the Walker administration and perhaps some of the Republicans have gotten a message out that this is all about finances, and it's so far beyond that. I mean, I appreciate the comments on money, and if this were solely about the financial issue, I don't think you'd have the people, literally thousands of people, coming to the Capitol today. It's really about the fact of taking away rights and basically having a bill that has really, and if people, and I hope that many of the listeners, if they want to, go to the State of Wisconsin website, look at that bill, and in all those pages, so few of it really deals with the financial part. Most of it actually deals with refinancing of debt, and the rest of it's all policy. And the issue is, why is there a need not to just at least say, let's sit down with the unions? And, you know, as Doug said, if the unions refuse to come up with some solutions, then I think we have a different conversation. I think the majority of the public in Wisconsin are on our side on this because they see that there's been no discussion at all.
Thanks, Doug, for the call. Here's an interesting question that comes in from John in Madison, and it is, what was this country like when it worked, and what is different now?
Well, we all of us here are workers, and we're working. I think that the difference is, and this is a part where, I'm not a college professor, but I did grow up, listening to labor history and looking at Wisconsin labor history, you know, that things were different. I mean, you look at the 1890s, we look at the reason why did we get these laws on the books? Why did we feel that it was important, to codify the rights of public sector employees? And in simplest terms, you know, public employees don't have the same rights as private employees. That's why the state can take this and basically, you know, really get rid of them very relatively easily. We don't need to have a society where you really have a permanent second-class citizen base, which is what happens with public sector unions. We all work together. We need to find a way to work peacefully together. And I think that if people just take a deep breath, look at it and say, all right, we have financial issues, then we have these what I call really civil rights issues. Let's separate the two. And I really think we can address the financial issues together really effectively.
Glenn in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi. I appreciate Mr. Badger's comments, and I think there's one thing that we're missing in the bigger scheme of things, and that's the idea that this fiction that has been created that there is absolutely no time, that policy comes before money, that there are no alternatives. I think Mr. Badger can concur, whether you're in a classroom, whether you're in a county building, whether you're working for $12 an hour, you're working for $30 an hour. The idea that most people forget is you are also the gatekeeper for the quality of the work, whether you have students, whether you have work to do. You are the one that says, look, this is the max we can do. This is the best we can offer our customers. And that's something that's being taken away. I mean, it's taking away your ability to serve best, but also what it does is it takes away your political right. Nobody is talking about it as disenfranchisement. I think it's kind of obviously political to just simply say there's no time, there's no money. It's a false truth. They're making it no time, no money because they've rushed it. And I think it speaks to the idea that if everybody would sit down and look at it and say, I want the best people doing the best job, this is short-sighted. And this is really about one-upmanship, wiping out a political opponent for a progressive group of people who are just like everyone else, except for the fact that they do not support Governor Walker's plan.
Rick.
Well, obviously, I agree. I mean, the members I represent are frontline workers. I mean, these are the people, when you go into the county nursing home, these are the CNAs. And these are the people when you go and you go to the registered deeds office, these are the people helping you. And they know what it's like. We're not in the business of widgets. You can't say, like a business, and say, well, we're just going to shut this factory down or do something. The public still needs to be served. And this really is about, again, the public has a say in what's going on, and they should have a say. But this is about having a mechanism that allows people to express their opinions and provide the quality services, as the caller mentioned, that we all want. And so my question is, if we've had decades of labor peace and quality services, why is there this immediate rush to upset that apple cart and take away the rights that really have been a Wisconsin tradition?
You know, you say that it's about the rights, but when you mention CNAs, and I'm thinking of other state workers who don't make very much money. I mean, nobody who works for the state makes a whole lot of money. It's just that we don't. And we've had stable employment. And, you know, I think it's fairly honest to say that the benefits have kept us, you know, doing what we do. It makes our jobs a little bit stable. But when you're talking about adding a hefty cost to benefits for CNA workers and not being able to bargain at all your conditions of employment, that's going to really hurt the people who don't make very much money.
Absolutely. I mean, this is going to fall disproportionately on the lower wage workers. And you know, we haven't gotten into this disproportionately on a lot of female workers just because of the jobs that they tend to hold. And again, this goes back to having a legitimate debate and going back to a previous caller's comment that there's no time. We are where we are. We're talking about, you know, in less than a week, changing the ability of people, whether they're CNAs or highway workers or social workers or what have you, to have any say. And I guess it's that opportunity to have that, you know, cross the table discussion and come up with solutions. And I know from my experience, I used to negotiate labor contracts for my union. For members in the Fox Valley, oftentimes we had employers who did not have much money. There was not a lot to talk about, but there were ways of having employees understand that, figure creative solutions, and really what we received here is basically we don't care about your opinion, we don't care about how solutions you have, even though there's really ways we could come to the table to probably come up with solutions if we were afforded that opportunity.
Thanks, Glenn. We have about a minute left. Sarah is next. Hi, Sarah.
Oh, hi. Great. Thanks. I just wonder, when I first heard about this, I thought, why does the state have the right to dictate what the union can do? And then I heard that if this passes, some expert guest said that they're going to immediately appeal it to the courts. And I wonder what legal grounds there would be for overturning it.
Well, and really briefly, I mean, obviously we're looking at all the options. And we will look at, you know, if these are legal actions, we will do that. But really, the simplest way to stop this is just to have the legislature say, no, this is unacceptable, which is why you see so much of the public supporting us and saying this is an overreach at the grandest scale. So our first thing right now is to fight it in the court of public opinion and to and hopefully convince the legislators who are there to represent all of us to see what's in the best interest of all the citizens of the state.
Yeah, but you're being overly optimistic, don't you think? This is going to be a vote that will happen tomorrow.
Well, the stuff is still not over, and it's not just being Pollyanna or overly optimistic. I have to believe that there are folks within the caucus who really, while there's a tremendous pressure, I am sure, on them to vote the party line. I just want to make it clear to everybody, we don't view this as a Republican or Democratic issue. We really view this as a good government policy issue. And we will continue to reach out to them, and let's see what happens today.
All right, Rick, thank you so much. We'll be in touch again.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Rick Badger, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 40, representing more than 33,000 city, county, school district, and caregiving employees in all but one of Wisconsin's 72 counties. We also thank the Communications Coordinator from WEAC for being with us, and Sean Johnson, State Government Reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in Milwaukee.